feel your body. You said you won't design. You know my heart goes crazy. When you clean your lips, touch mine. Let's explore our love. And the candlelight in mine will leave the world behind. Yeah.
To the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Okay, good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. That was the Temptations. A lot of you probably think it was My Girl. Well, it was built on My Girl, and it's called State. And I want to thank John Williams for sharing that with me and bringing it to my attention. I'd forgotten how great that song was. So, again, thank you. And this morning, as I had talked to you last week, we had Dr. Bill and Down Earth and the others on, Kathy Gogill from Hawaii, the Animal Rights Hawaii. And I invited Dr. Bill back, and what I wanted to talk about is taking the opportunity to take advantage of his willingness to come and talk about diet and how some of you who are my friends out there and just good people, how we can fight this effort and become a little more healthy and fight diabetes and what have you. And if you have any questions, now we're not going to give medical advice because you don't want to take my medicine that I prescribe. It would probably all be Johnny Walker Red and a little lemon. So, wouldn't want that. So what we're going to do is talk about that. And I have Dr. William Harris here with me. And feel free, 524-1080, if you have any questions. But we're going to be talking about diet. And I believe, and I'm convinced now, that diet gets us in trouble, and diet can get us out of trouble. And good morning, Dr. Bill, and thank you for joining me.
Good morning. You hear me now, Carol?
I can hear you now. All right.
Okay, I'm here.
So, again, thank you. And if you would give a little background of what you've done. And you are co-founder of the Vegetarian Society here in Hawaii, and you do a lot of the filming. But give us a little bit more on your background and what you did.
Okay, I am a founding member of the Vegetarian Society, and I've been a vegetarian since 1950 and a vegan since 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And I retired from emergency room medical practice in 1998.
Mm, okay. Well, and it looks pretty healthy, folks, and he's into raw diet. And absolutely no vegan. You are a vegan.
Vegan, yeah.
Not just a vegetarian. And could you just share with me, what does that mean?
A vegetarian is somebody that doesn't use any flesh food. That's by the International Vegetarian Union definition.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of vegan is someone that doesn't use any animal food at all, and that includes milk and eggs
mm-hmm.
as well.
Eggs and milk and any animal product.
Yeah, and philosophical vegans will also not use any animal products for clothing.
Like leather shoes, cow leather shoes, or leather sofas.
That used to be a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can walk into Payless and get a great pair of shoes for about, what, $20.
Mm-hmm.
So we no longer have that problem. And as far as leather belts go, nobody has to wear a belt anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I was reading something you shared with me about the Marshallese and the Marshall Islands, and hopefully you can talk a bit about that. I know it's not your particular project, but you're familiar with it. But diabetes seemed to have settled in on us throughout the nation. So what, some 21 million people are affected by this or more?
That sounds about right.
So the types of diabetes, I understand there's two types, type 1 and type 2. Can you share with us what is type 1 and then what is type 2, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay. By the way, am I coming through? I can't hear myself in the headphone. You're getting it?
Yeah.
Okay. There are two types of diabetes. They both share one common phenomenon, that is an elevated blood sugar. And I can't hear myself now. Maybe I'm not plugged in. You're hearing me? We got a little problem with the mic, folks. Maybe I'd be better off not hearing myself. Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. The two types of diabetes are both characterized by high blood sugar,
mm-hmm.
but there are different reasons. In type 1 diabetes, which is also called juvenile diabetes, there is no insulin, and therefore the sugar can't get into the cells where it is intended to go mm-hmm. in order to metabolize. And that's because the pancreas, the beta cells of the pancreas have been blown out, and it's basically an autoimmune reaction. Now, type 2 diabetes is a different matter. It's primarily associated with being overweight. Almost all type 2 diabetics are overweight, although there are a few exceptions. However, When you look at it from an epidemiological perspective, why almost all of type 2 diabetics are too heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And for all intents and purposes, the strategy to solve that problem is to lower weight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, talking about diabetes and what a catastrophe it can be, you can go down to the Marshall Islands, where we did atomic bomb testing in the 1940s, and you find that 50% of the population has type 2 diabetes. Now, there's a lady named Brenda Davis, who, in my opinion, is probably the best and most knowledgeable nutritionist on the planet, who has been working with the Marshallese, and she's solved their problem by putting them on a vegan diet, whole food vegan diet, with a fair amount of exercise as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been able to I hate to use the term cure, because that's something we don't generally say in the medical profession, but the folks no longer have their diabetes because they've stayed on her vegan diet, and they've all lost large amounts of weight, and they've stopped eating the junk food that we put them on as a result of our involvement in the atomic bomb testing. Because after we had wiped out their environment and made them move to other islands and trashed their native agriculture, which is, you know, bananas and plant foods and fish,
mm-hmm.
we started sending them spam and soft drinks.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to crash anybody's health was ever invented.
I thank you for sharing that video with me, and I'm going to actually post a link to Brenda Davis on the Vegetarian Society you filmed.
Yeah, that's good.
And that is an eye-opener, and for me, it serves several purposes. I believe that here locally, this is something, it's a sad commentary about us as a community now, people, in that we strike out at the Marshallese, the Marshall Islanders, for the wrong reasons. And so if the average person watched this video and what Brenda is sharing, she's a dietitian, and what she's sharing, how, as you've spoken, the nuclear bomb tests and what have you, the radiation, within 60 years, she's saying that there originally little or no diabetes. Within 60 years, what, a population of 60,000 people, and now it's rampant, and they're having to try and capture it or contain it. And it is sugar drinks. They were eating spam. She showed pictures and videos, and absolutely.
I'm glad you watched that video. I'm sure you would.
It was a struggle watching it, but at the same time, an eye-opener. And I'm actually going to invite those that want to see it. And I think it'll answer a lot of questions to when they see the Marshallese here. They'll understand a little more. It's they're not asking for hands out. They've just been pushed out. And now they're stuck. And Brenda gives a great detail, a historical background, and also... And she mentioned one other thing was that if you had money there, you could make it to Hawaii and get treatment. But the dialysis and all that would be needed for others wasn't available.
Well, that's probably true. But the basic takeaway message is that you don't have to have
mm-hmm.
type 2 diabetes. It's a completely preventable and almost completely regressible
mm-hmm.
Disease, and you get rid of weight and start eating properly, and it goes away
mm-hmm.
because it is it's really more of a syndrome than a disease. I think you could say that type 1 diabetes is a disease because the pancreas has been permanently damaged, but you know, type mm-hmm. 2 diabetes is simply the result of improper feeding practices, and if you learn to eat right, it goes away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I would like to mention that we have three videos on that website. It's www.video.vsh.org, and then we've got videos by Brenda Davis, mm-hmm. and Milton Mills, who's a black physician from the East, and Carolyn Trapp, who works with Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and they're all dealing with type 2 diabetes in exactly the same fashion, namely putting people on a vegan diet, mm-hmm. getting their weight down, and for the most part, that solves the problem. And it's established now that PCRM's method of treating diabetes with a vegan diet, mm-hmm. low-fat vegan diet, produces better results than the American Diabetes Association diet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that, again, wanted to say that Marsha Lee's situation is a true testament that it's primarily about diet and eating the wrong foods. And so, speaking of that, what would you, starting off, for a person that wants to either reverse the conditions that is the onset of the diabetes, what would you say the first step that person should do outside of going to a medical doctor being evaluated? What would you offer for advice?
Well, I sound like a parrot when people ask me this question, because the answer always comes out the same. Go vegan.
Go vegan.
Go on a vegan diet. Cut out all the animal food and the junk food. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 9/10 of the medical budget of the United States would go away if people would stop eating the wrong food.
Mm-hmm.
They're simply eating grease, deep fried, and hot fat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a couple of aphorisms that I recommend. The first one is, if it doesn't have any fiber, don't eat it, okay? Because if it has no fiber, it's either animal food, which carries a big load of cholesterol and saturated fat and raises your risk for cardiovascular disease, or it is highly processed plant food like refined sugar and vegetable oil, which is 100% fat.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason to eat that. And then the other bit of advice is, if man made it, don't eat it. Because if man made it, he made it for selfish reasons, not for your benefit. He made it to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he will use fat, sugar, and salt to make you make it taste better than it really is, and so you will eat more of it than you should, and so that he will make more profit than he deserves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are a couple of good aphorisms.
What veggies could I eat to get fiber, for example?
Every vegetable has fiber. Yeah,
okay.
Fiber is a fundamental characteristic of all plant food, because fiber is basically what makes up the cell walls, mm-hmm. of plants.
Mm-hmm.
Now, animals don't have any fiber because, number one, they don't have any cell walls. Mm-hmm. They've got cell membranes. The plants have cell membranes, too, but they're in on the inside of the wall. And secondly, because animals cannot metabolize cellulose, which is the main ingredient of fiber.
Which do you feel, sugar, is it the arch enemy of the diet? Does it pose the real big risk that some talk about? How would you describe it?
Refined sugar, yeah, it's a major threat. However, your body runs on sugar. It just says that it's got to come with the vitamins and the minerals necessary to metabolize it, which refined sugar does not have. And which all fruit and actually all vegetables as well have fiber and sugar,
mm-hmm.
and then placed together.
Most people look at say, well, I'm not eating animal fat, oil or grease, but I eat vegetable oil. What is the pitfall or downfall of vegetable oil?
Well, the pitfall of any 100% fat. And it's the wrong kind of fat. It's primarily omega-2 fatty acid. It's linoleic acid. Doesn't have anywhere near enough of the prime essential omega-3 fatty acid, which is alpha-linolenic acid. So you've got a terrible mix of fats, and the oil is 100% fat.
Mm-hmm.
than have any of the metabolizing agents.
And so for the layperson out there, when you consume something cooked in oil, of plant oil, what kind of effects does it have on the body? What should, to understand this, what does it do? It's been stripped of many of the nutrients, or of what? What would you, how would you
describe? Well, yeah, all the nutrients have been taken out of the oil. You can start with a perfectly healthy food, like, say, a seed. Let's talk about sunflower seed. That's a fairly healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
But once you've turned it into sunflower oil, it's nothing but fat. You've gotten rid of all the nutrients.
So you're eating pretty much an empty calories. So
it's as bad as eating white sugar.
So
maybe worse.
Maybe worse. Wow. And the big thing is, Ben, well, we no longer cook with animal fat. That was almost chorus going on when you talk to people. They're becoming healthy. We don't have the trans fat. So what about that?
What about trans fats? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you start with vegetable oil, which is bad enough by itself, but then you heat it up in the presence of a nickel catalyst, and while you are destroying some double bonds, you are creating other abnormal double bonds, and so that fat, which was, you know, semi-tolerable when you started with it, has now become an abnormal fat that your body can't metabolize, and it behaves exactly the way a saturated animal fat would. It raises your serum cholesterol levels, and also it gets into the cell membranes, and nobody really knows what effect that has, but it can't be good, because the type of fat in the cell membrane determines the fluidity and the dynamics of what's going on in the cell membrane.
And that's how the cell is operating. If it's filled with oil, there's maybe no room for the other.
Well, the oil's pretty much on the outside, mm-hmm. in the membranes, but it disturbs the influx and outflow of nutrients and all of the other processes that have to go on inside the cell.
So the three culprits are fat, sugar, and salt.
Yeah, and that's what the food industry makes its money on. These are the three most addictive substances in the human diet. And you can look at any package of crinkly stuff that you see in a box in the grocery store, and almost guaranteed there'll be sugar, fat, and salt in there.
Okay, well, let's take fat. When speaking of the labels on the box, I, as a layperson, I'm concerned. I've been told I can read the box. They have to declare the amount of fat, the amount of salt, and or sodium. What is fat? What level of fat should I look for? What percentage is a safe level of me?
Well, you can't depend on the label, because the FDA not only allows but requires that you round off fat to the nearest half gram. So if you want to make the pitch that you have got a 100% fat-free margarine, for mm-hmm. example, mm-hmm. all you have to do is jimmy the serving size down to the point where there's less than a half gram in a serving, and you can round it off and say it is zero fat, even though if you look at the numbers more closely, you will find that it is 100% fat.
Mm.
And there's a couple of margarines that are still on the market claiming to be fat-free when they're, in fact, 100% of calories from fat.
Do we know the names of them? Or?
Yeah, let's see. What was one?
If you don't know, no problem.
I can't remember just offhand. I somewhere in here I got a picture of stuff, but
mm-hmm.
you got to watch those labels, because, well, they say nutrition facts, a more appropriate term would be nutrition lies.
Mm-hmm.
Those nutrition facts are just totally bogus.
So the best thing to do is try to eat fresh vegetables, no meat, and avoid the butters, the margarines, the milks,
anything man-made. Mm-hmm. Be really leery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason that a whole food plant diet works, a vegan diet works, is because all of the essential nutrients that are required in the human diet are synthesized only by plants or microorganisms.
Mm-hmm.
None of them are synthesized by animals. So you can get those essential nutrients by eating animals, but you're getting them secondhand, and you could just as easily have gotten them from the plant.
Mm-hmm. So then this is rather scary. I mean, you don't want to trust labels, but...
You can't trust labels.
You can't, and you know how government can be so lax and the numbers can be shuffled around.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Good morning. A call, a question, a statement for the doctor.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to ask Dr. Bill about eating fruit when you have diabetes.
Okay, eating fruit with diabetes. Well,
now you're hanging up. Thank you. And if you would answer.
First of all, Tony, is it type 1 or type 2? I guess you weren't. Well, I think you have to be a little cautious with the fruit until you are making inroads and bringing your blood sugar down, and if you're overweight, bringing your weight down, because fruit can be problematic if you are a severe diabetic. I wouldn't recommend that a severe diabetic eat any fruit at all.
Mm-hmm.
But
no fruit at all if you're a severe diabetic.
Yeah, but as I said, if you're type 2 diabetic, it's completely reversible, and once you've completely reversed it, you can cautiously introduce the fruit back in.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that you always have to remember is that sugar is bad for you in its concentrated form, but your body basically runs on sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain utilizes sugar almost exclusively as its nutrition. That's what your brain runs on, sugar.
So that explains why they call it sweet dreams, huh?
Maybe so, yeah.
Well, and so there's good, and if it's done right, if the body is, it's introduced to the body in a proper fashion.
Yeah,
but it's bad if it's, and it's so what you're telling me is that the average meal, people are going to put sugar in it, and they're going to put fat in it, and salt. That's almost a triple...
It's a triple whammy.
Wow.
It's actually animal food is a quadruple whammy because it's all secondhand nutrients. And in addition to being totally unnecessary, it's got a very good chance of making you sick.
I want to try to be elementary here and real simple on this because I have people going, you have the vegetarian cookbook lady, Rebecca Woodman.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to call and ask, and this is what my listeners tell me. And so what I was going to ask you, just take the local diet here of vegetables or what's available. What would I safely be able to use in a daily meal of the types of vegetables that would sufficiently provide me with the nutrients that I need? And would I need a supplement? Walk me through the kinds of vegetables.
Okay. First of all, there's no special vegetable. Anything that you see in the produce section of, a farmer's market or any grocery store is going to be perfectly healthy.
Mm-hmm.
The healthiest foods are the leafy greens, and that's for the simple reason that the leafy greens are where all of the essential nutrients required in the human diet are produced.
Mm-hmm.
Sunlight comes in and hits the leaf, and the leaf uses chlorophyll to turn it into glucose, first of all, and then takes glucose and makes all of the essential amino acids, the two essential fatty acids, and all the vitamins.
Mm-hmm.
So the leafy greens are numero uno.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that you ought to try to use as much as possible.
Kale, bok choy,
one
bok. How about cabbage, the regular cabbage?
Cabbage is fine. It's very nutritious.
And how about red cabbages? Does one provide better or more nutrients than the other?
Yeah, there probably are some slight differences. If somebody really needed to know, I have a nutrition program on my computer here that could give the answer. But it'd take more time than we want to spend. But the answers are there, and the answers are basically leafy greens give you more nutrition and fewer calories than any other food. And the way you lose weight is by making sure that you get all of your nutrition, that you meet the RDA for all the essential nutrients before you meet your calorie requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you've met all of RDAs for the nutrients, your body has to take the missing calories out of your fat stores, and so that's how you lose about a pound a week on a vegan diet.
When you say RDAs, required daily?
Required daily allowance.
Okay. Now, there's one other element here, so if you don't eat it and then you eat the proper thing, I understand exercise is another key component of recovering and stabilizing and staying healthy.
Yes, exercise and diet are the mainstays of health.
Mm-hmm.
Most people think in terms of exercise as a means of losing weight, but it's not actually a very efficient means, because if you get, let's say you go out and drink a soft drink that's got 500 calories,
mm-hmm.
that's empty calories again, and in order to burn it off, you're going to have to go out and run about 5 miles. But the reason that nutrition, that exercise is so important, is that your body depends on circulation, and the only way you can keep your circulatory reflexes working properly is to get exercise on a regular and compulsive daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be every day. And this is the one time when you want to become an addict. And stay away from all the other addictions, but feel free to become an exercise addict. And you don't have to be an Olympic athlete. You
mm-hmm.
just have to do something that will raise your pulse and make you sweat.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the symptoms of diabetes, type 2 diabetes? What should a person look for if they have not been diagnosed or seem to have problems?
Well, you'll probably be spilling some sugar in your urine.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that you can tell, but you can get a dipstick and find out about that. You'll be getting very heavy. If you get into the really bad stages, which is diabetic ketoacidosis,
mm-hmm.
your breath will start to smell like fingernail polish, and that's acetone.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming out in your breath.
And that is a byproduct. The acetone is a byproduct.
That's because your body has had to start breaking down its proteins and fat,
mm-hmm.
Your body is unable to utilize the sugar that's coming into your diet.
Mm-hmm.
Did we have a call there a second ago?
It went away.
It did. Okay.
It happens sometimes.
Okay.
you might have answered their question.
Okay.
Or they may have gotten shy, The one of the things, so nausea and vomiting,
yeah.
I was told that how is it a frequent or repeated vomiting and nausea, or is it just what the person should watch for, how frequent?
Talking type 2 diabetes, I don't think this is a really common phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
You see this more in type 1, where a person has not taken his or her insulin,
mm-hmm.
because once you've wiped out your pancreas, you have to take insulin on a daily basis,
mm-hmm.
which is what makes type 1 diabetes such a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. And I understand, person, if they feel fatigued, they are experiencing fatigue, they can be concerned there, if that's one of the symptoms of the diabetes.
Well, yeah, but that's a symptom of so many things that it's not at all specific.
Mm-hmm. But is there a combination of symptoms that if they come on and one's fatigue, weight loss, things of that nature?
Well, weight loss would be in type 1.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm missing some of the classic symptoms here, but I'm...
Well, that's okay. It's just they talk about infections. In reading and doing it, talked about various infections that may set on would be some kinds of symptoms.
Yeah.
And excessive eating. I thought, well, I'll wait until he come in, and because it's a really technical subject, and I don't want to sit here and give the wrong advice or the wrong information that, you know, make a person sicker. But what blurry vision, I understand the vision can also, a bad vision can develop from diabetes.
You can develop serious, disastrous visual complications from diabetes. You can go blind.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've really got heavy-duty diabetes, you're going to have problems in every organ system in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that the red flag for practically every disease is too much weight. If you weigh too much, you're at risk for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, 33% of the American public is now classified as obese. And so this is our major problem. I'm astounded that nutritionists are still worrying about the possibility that we might be deficient in some vitamin or some mineral when it's, you know, the only thing they ever see in their practice is people that are trying to lose weight,
mm-hmm.
overweight. That's the major nutritional problem in this country. We don't see beriberi or scurvy or pellagra anymore. These are diseases that went out in the early part of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
But we see plenty of overweight, lots and lots of fat people. Mm-hmm. And I might add, if this problem results in our, like $3 trillion medical bill,
mm-hmm.
and that in turn is a direct responsibility of the United States Department of Agriculture, which subsidizes all of the wrong products of American agriculture. It won't let the meat and dairy lobbies die a natural death. It keeps bailing them out. Our local legislature does the same thing, as you know from our
previous show,
discussion about SB 249, which is going to bail out a private slaughterhouse to the tune of $1.6 million
mm-hmm.
at a time when the state doesn't have enough money to keep the schools running properly. And then the other culprit is the Internal Revenue Service, which allows tax deductions on business advertising. And the people that are getting all the subsidies, the meat and dairy lobby and the junk food industry, proceed to plow their profit margins in advertising, which ties up the media and makes it impossible for the vegan and vegetarian perspective on nutrition to be heard by large numbers of people.
Mm-hmm.
It simply locks up the media.
Yeah. So the knowledge to prevent type 1 is they really don't know all of the details about it. But let's just ask this question. How about alcohol? Can I or should I stop drinking if I have diabetes?
Yeah.
Would it impact my or influence my condition?
I certainly wouldn't. I can't recommend large amounts of alcohol
mm-hmm.
under any circumstances. If you're a healthy person, a little bit of wine now and then probably doesn't do any harm, or
mm-hmm.
Occasional beer, but I spent too much time taking care of alcoholic patients when I was a physician to ever want to recommend that anybody use very much of this stuff.
Just right across the board, just simply don't consume much of it.
Yeah, don't use it.
Now, how does it affect when we look at alcohol and the metabolism of the person, how does that affect a potential or pre-diabetes person or person with diabetes? What does it do?
It's another form of empty calorie, and it has some metabolic pathways that I can't recall mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. offhand, but it's not good for you, and
mm-hmm.
you know, everybody understands that. It doesn't get metabolized like sugar. It can't be utilized by the body.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it has severe effects on your mentation.
Mm. Now, there is another practice or behavior, and that is smoking. What do you say about smoking?
Absolute thumbs down. This is the worst thing you can do to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If they used to call them coffin meals back in the 30s.
Right.
Now, but you could not take a better description.
And it's still...
You can still buy the stuff over the counter, which is really weird because you can't buy marijuana. I never saw anybody die of marijuana, but I've seen thousands of people die from smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol, which you can also buy over the counter. So we've got this thing about certain drugs that nobody can use without going straight to jail or passing go, but you can't use things that are relatively innocuous. Now, I don't recommend any kind of drug for anybody, but, you know, the schizophrenic nature of our government could not be better expressed than our obsessive desire to put down certain drugs and make other drugs freely available across the board and actually to tax their sales.
And I know you've seen, as an emergency room doctor, you've seen many of alcohol caused incidents or accidents.
And I always used to say that one alcoholic coming in the door was the equivalent of 10 heart attacks as far as tying up the emergency room, because you don't know where you're at dealing with these people. You can't tell whether they're drunk or crazy or seriously ill. It's very difficult to sort them out.
So drinking alcohol would compete if you got diabetes or you're taking diabetic medicines, and it just upset the apple cart, I guess.
It definitely would make very difficult.
So it's bad. And then smoking, what does smoking do? How does it affect the metabolism, especially it degrades, say, the patient's health of a diabetes patient?
Well, it's a risk factor for almost every type of cancer, number one. Secondly, it will lead, if you don't die of cancer from smoking, you'll probably wind up with emphysema, you know, carrying around your own oxygen bottle and maybe even a pressure breather as you get older. Because it's a chronic irritant to the bronchial tree and the lung, and just closes down normal physiology. It blows out the alveoli, which are the tiny little air sacs at the end of the bronchial tree, and that reduces the surface area through which you can absorb oxygen and exchange carbon dioxide. So your respiratory function just goes straight down the tubes.
So it's degrading your respiratory.
Yeah, it makes it impossible for you to breathe normally.
Good morning. Good morning, Carly. You have a question to speak?
It's me talking.
Well, go ahead and...
Can hardly hear you.
And what's your question?
Can hardly hear you. My question is, not my question, but my comment is, I'm very happy and very grateful to have doctors like you come on the radio and tell and explain to the people. Because when people go to the doctor says, you got diabetes. The poor person is devastated, and just like the doctor said, I got them in my clutches now, a good $1,000 a month for me. And this doctor, he's very good. He explains to the people, if you eat the correct food, your diabetes will go away. Why can't these doctors tell this to our patients that go in there, that have to spend every time we visit them? I guarantee you it costs $800 to $2,000. We're tired of this. These doctors are opening stores and to make money for themselves. This Dr. William is very good. He explained to the person. Well, he made the person feel better. So the person says, I'm going to eat better and take better care of myself.
Well, thank you, and we'll have him on again if he's willing to come
back. Yes, I'm very grateful to have people like you bringing people, good doctors and good people like you, because I'm looking for Hesh. I'm going to give Hesh a free lunch for what he did to me 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
For explaining about India with the water bottle.
All right.
And I'm getting healthier because of him. So I'm looking for him so I can give him a free lunch.
All righty.
It's his reward.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Aloha.
Yeah, bye-bye.
I wonder, was she saying that she can't hear me?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hey, caller, you got a question or comment for Dr. Williams?
A question.
Yes.
Doctor, in the human race, why way back didn't a certain portion of the human race become vegetarians?
Why didn't a certain portion of the human race become vegetarian? That's a really good...
Well, from the beginning, you know what I mean? When man was starting out, roaming across whatever plains that he was roaming across and had his pick of any food that he could capture or gather, why did he migrate to the other source of protein and...
Meat, you mean?
Meat, fish,
okay.
You know what I mean? You know, different... Yeah, meat and fish.
Okay.
And then when he learned to harvest the cow, he got the milk, got the cheese, got the cream, got the eggs from the birds and the trees. What meat? And then I'm going to collaborate with, if there was no one that went to vegetarianism, there was a reason for it, and why today is not the only people in the world vegetarian.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a good ask. That's about it. It's fresh. I'll listen off air. Okay?
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that's a great question. And one that I particularly appreciate that kind of skepticism. First of all, we are primates, and our primate history goes back 60 million years. Now, about 4 million years ago, we stopped being arboreal tree-living primates, living almost exclusively on plant foods, fruits and leaves and nuts and maybe occasional bird's eggs if we could catch them. But we came down out of the trees because there was a drought in Central Africa, and as a result of that, our ancestors, which were large tree-living vegetarians, had to come down out of the trees, and then they had to scrounge around to eat to find food, and they ate anything that was available.
They became opportunistic, huh?
Yeah, we became opportunistic, and initially we were scavengers. We'd pick up dead animal bodies that had been left over by some predator, like a large canid or a large felid,
mm-hmm.
feline, and we'd eat them. And then later we developed a certain ability to be able to hunt them properly. And that may not go back much farther than, say, 25,000 years ago, according to some of the anthropologists. So the reason that there has never been a vegetarian society, as this gentleman has quite rightly observed, is because it would restrict feeding opportunities too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're wasting a potential source of food. And under conditions under which you have to use any kind of food that you can find, it's very adaptive to learn how to kill and eat animals, and that's why we became hunters.
Mm-hmm.
However, obviously, we don't no longer have that problem. We are awash, literally awash in a toxic food environment, which is making everybody sick, and we are eating exactly the wrong foods that we should be eating, because over that 60 million year period as primates, most of our organic evolution took place, and we're developing our organ systems primarily off plant foods, and we're still adapted to eat plant foods. We do not have a requirement for animal food for anything, because as I pointed out, all of the essential nutrients for us are synthesized only by plants and microorganisms. Now, I must add to that if we were cats, I could not say that, because cats require arachidonic acid, taurine, retinol, and carnitine
mm-hmm.
to be healthy. So if you try to raise your kitty cat as a vegan, you're going to have to get special cat food that has those ingredients, because the cats are obligate carnivores. They have to have animal food.
Well, let's just look at our dentures.
We're not cats.
Let's look at our dentures. We don't have the fangs or the incisors as we have crushing and grinding primarily.
I think.
And that speaks to right there.
Primarily adaptive to grinding molars. Although we do have canine teeth.
Yeah, we do.
And gorillas have very large canine teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And they are pretty much vegetarian. If they eat anything from an animal, it's probably by accident.
But I had it explained to me that, and I've read it, that they have those canines to penetrate the larger stem or tuberous type plants when they are in near the wetlands and the marshes or whatever. That was what was explained. But again, and we're going to, we're coming down to the wire here. But I'd like to, when I hear questions like that, I don't know where to place them and I don't take issue with them. But because I have to ask this one basic question. Who cares about the argument when we look around us and see the people with their legs being amputated and seeing family being decimated by this disease called diabetes? While the caller may be right, we're still dead wrong. If I might borrow. So.
Well, we're certainly dead wrong in that we're eating the wrong food. But but his question is very important.
Yes.
And I'm glad he asked it.
And it happens that way quite a bit. Hold on. Good morning, caller, real quick. A comment, a question for Dr. Harris?
Hello.
Hello. Got a comment,
Hi.
A question?
Hi, this is Lorraine. I'm calling Bill there. Hi, Bill.
Yes,
right.
Hi. Hey, just wanted to remind you about our next Vegetarian Society of Hawaii meeting where we will be featuring a guy named Mike Pian, who's a starving Googler and who has fought his own battle against ill health and obesity, and he has lowered his blood sugar through a vegan diet. And that'll be a Tuesday, May 10, 7 p.m. at the Alawai Golf Course Clubhouse.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm. thanks for calling. I was about to forget. Yeah. Maybe. Go ahead.
Real quickly. Where is this again? Right. And it's open to the public. Is it free? Is it?
All our meetings are open to the public.
And the Vegetarian Society meets how often and where?
Once a month.
And where is it? Is it open to the public?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
it's free.
What's the phone number to them on the website, real quick, because we're coming down. We've got about a minute and a half.
Lorraine, you're still there?
Yes, you can call 944-VEGGIE, that's 944-8344, or visit our website, www.bsh.org, for more information.
Okay, and then, again, at the Alawai Golf Course Clubhouse, when?
Tuesday, May 10 at 7 p.m.
Okay, and the public is invited. You're going to be discussing issues of diabetes and health?
Mike Pian lowered his blood sugar, and he wasn't suffering from diabetes terribly, but, that was, that's one factor in poor health.
Okay.
Yeah, this is going to be a great lecture. I'm really sorry I didn't mention it because Mike lost, something like 150 pounds on a vegan diet. He started off as an animal rights vegan, which is like eating one-third of an apple, because there are three good reasons for being a vegan. There's ethics, and there's health, and then there's the environment, which is really important. He only ate the animal rights side of it, but he finally figured out that you got to eat the other two-thirds.
Well, thank you. Thank you, caller. We're going to shut down for this hour, and we'll be back in the next hour. Please join us. And thank you again. You can pick this up at carol at carolcox.com. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Bill Harris, or William Harris. Hopefully some of the information helps, and please feel free to call. If you have other questions, we'll get them to Dr. Harris, and you'll be coming back with us again, will you?
Be happy to.
All righty. Well, thank you. Aloha, and I'll see you shortly.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K1.
Well, now it takes more than a rodding to make the wind go, and it takes two lips to fire.
off my feet. And baby, you've got what it takes. Well, well, you know you've got just what it takes, because it takes more than to stay away from you. It takes more than a lifetime to prove that I'll be true. And it takes somebody special to make me say I do. And baby, you've got what it takes. Well, well, you know you've got just what it takes, because it takes more than an effort to stay away. And it takes more than a lifetime to prove that I'll be true. And it takes somebody special to make me say I do. And baby, you've got what it takes. Well, well, and baby, you
are. You're listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, and again, sitting here, I asked Dr. Bild, who was on the first hour, to hang around, and he has some interesting concerns and insight on the rail, in which I'll be discussing the rail and some ethics issues and what have you. I don't know what the official name of this train of this rail system that they have. I know what they probably got, some cute name. But I'm convinced now we need to call it the gravy train or the G train, because when you really look back and see what's happening, the politics and the boys that's going to make the money, and we'll talk about names such as you've heard of, and maybe you're not, you've not heard of the name, the infamous Apo, as in Todd. Or long, long, long time ago, there was a guy who was reporting to be the mayor, and his name was Mulifa Hanuma. And and he brought in all of his little minions and set it up. You know, the funny thing is, you can't trust any of these guys. And I can't forget. There's another gentleman, the $5,000 a month gravy train man, that's Nestor Garcia, our city councilman. Funny thing is, nobody has screamed to ask him to leave or anything, and you'll see that even if we file ethics complaints, you'll see that Chuck Cotto and the, quote, ethics commission will do little or nothing, and we have a mayor who sits on the throne now, who was a city prosecutor, never ever did a criminal investigation on any of this or initiated anything. And the funny part is, he shows up now carrying a banner and a flag and the colors for the gravy train. So the gravy train is, I name it as such, because everywhere you turn, there's money. If you recall, Mufi Hanuman, our former mayor, was back in Pittsburgh and hanging out with Bombardier people. And I understand Bombardier might be filing a complaint or a challenge to some of this as to discussing why they didn't get it, or they think there were some improprieties or something is going on. So, you know, you go back there, there was Paul Oglesby who helped them out and putting together that fundraiser back there, and that illegal fundraiser, I should offer. Helped him, and the poor guy didn't even get a piece of the gravy, didn't get any of the cut. So he's now, and this was, he told me personally, Paul did, that he was there because Mufi went to the same school he did, and he just wanted to help a brother out and sit around and drink beer and all. That was that fancy dinner they had, or gathering they had in Pittsburgh. So, boy, the gravy train. So, you know that there is talk that Mayor Carlisle is actually going to be bringing in, or considering now. I haven't seen an official statement from Mayor Carlisle, but I've heard some talk and read some writings where Todd Oppo actually speaks to this as that some have asked him to consider becoming part of the train authority, the transportation authority. Honolulu Transit Authority. And I just got to tell you, it's a sad commentary. You see, Todd Oppo, when chairman of the city council, wrote an article in one of the online papers and said, this is some of the things that vote yes on the first charter amendment question to create a transit authority for Honolulu's high-capacity mass transit system. The bottom line is, a yes vote will help ensure that our project is done right and with the least amount of political interference or motivation. My goodness. Well, we should send this guy to heaven right away. He's a perfect candidate for heaven. But the problem is, he has a tail and a fork, because this is the work of the devil. This guy now is openly being talked. No, not to mention that he was just recently assessed a penalty, a civil penalty of $500 by the Ethics Commission. And we're going to talk in greater length about that. But Dr. Harris, share with us from the other side, what do you think about this rail? And don't hold back, because the gravy train, I'm sorry, I just misspoke.
I've been opposed to the idea of rail as a solution to our traffic ills since the time when Reen Macho put it down. I think that was maybe, 20 years ago? It must have been at least that.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense at all to me. I don't see any way. I certainly agree that there are severe traffic congestion problems. Due to the fact we only have one freeway, but I don't think that putting a train in there is going to be any part of the solution to the traffic problem. How are you going to utilize the train to go shopping, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
How are the emergency vehicles going to be able to utilize the train? There are, 10% of the vehicles on the road will not be able to utilize any aspect of this railroad, and the city's own figures show that it will not reduce traffic. The traffic is going to be worse by the time the thing is finished. And the thing that is most bothersome is that there is a solution to this traffic problem that we have, and Panos Providoris gave us the perfect solution, which is to build a piggyback freeway over what is Farrington, and then over the road that goes past the airport. And those things are projects that could have been accomplished using local labor. I mean, our own labor people were the ones that put in the freeways in the first place. This would just be another type of freeway construction. On the other hand, we now have the evidence that at least $17 million of the project, which was done, the building of the railroad cars by Ansaldo, which is an Italian firm, was done off-island. Our own labor unions did not benefit a bit from that. I'm not sure how much they're going to be able to benefit in building an electric train I don't know if they have the skill. I'm not sure if they've even thought it through. They see this as a massive jobs creation program. But whether it's going to function really on their behalf is something that they ought to reconsider, because I don't see any evidence that it's going to benefit the unions. And the people are going to be paying for this thing in the amounts of about, what, $5 billion. Are going to be the taxpayers. So this is, even if it is a public works program, it is going to be a means of transferring wealth from the people that have some money to people who feel that they're not getting enough. And they would be much better off, the union people would be much better off taking part in the things that we really need done, namely the repair of our infrastructure, which is in really decrepit state now. You can't go anywhere without running into road projects, reconstruction projects. And it seems to me that we ought to utilize our labor unions to help fix the infrastructure that has to be fixed anyway, whether we build a train or not.
What is it going to take? Everyone that I talk to, and it's strange, the ones that I talk to, and I'm not exaggerating, say they don't want the train, but yet it was voted for. Is it they don't want it now because of the politics, the money, the corruption, after the fact being disclosed? But where is the outrage? Why is it that the people are not standing up? Because it's going to be their money.
Yeah, well, I think you've hit on all of the above are the reasons that we've got stuck with this. Should point out that we never really had an up-and-down vote on rail. We were given the choice of voting for steel rail on, or steel wheel on steel rail versus something else. But the one alternative that would work is the one that they never considered, which was piggyback freeway, which has worked very well in Tampa, Florida, and a couple other places, and is not only self-sustaining and pays for itself, but which actually generates a little bit of profit.
Well, I found it quite interesting. I equated it to asking a person, if you were invited to dinner, what would you like to have? Would you like to have chicken or lasagna? And the person says, lasagna. And then they go and start cooking lasagna and say that everybody wanted lasagna. That's not the way it was. It was simple that they didn't ask us, did we want rail, period.
Yeah, exactly.
They asked us,
what kind of
rail? Do you want lasagna or chicken, you know? Yeah, right. And then they went back and said, everybody want dinner.
Yeah.
No, it didn't ask that question. And the trickery that's been played in this game, and it's so obvious. But that's what's perplexing, is that most of these little tricks have been disclosed and exposed, and yet still the general public is not outraged. You're a medical doctor. What's the psychological explanation? What are we just? Have we given up, or are we suffering from apathy, or what do you think?
I would say apathy's got to be a lot to do with it. I mean, what, 30-40% of the people go to polls and vote?
Right.
They can't exactly say that whatever was decided upon by unanimous acclamation, because not that many people got involved. I think it must be apathy.
Yeah. I look back at this, and I'm thinking there were some comments about Councilmember Nestor Garcia, who, regarding this complaint. Now, I want to lay it out for the people, and I'll relate the two. Some while back, about four and a half years ago, I filed a complaint that Councilmember Todd Oppo was violating ethics laws by representing Colleen on a matter on a boat ramp. And And it's very interesting. Some people probably think I'm foul-mouthed about this and I should be a little more respectful toward the city councilman. But a crook is a crook. I'm sorry. You can dress him up the way you want to, put bows in his hair. He's not little Bo Peep. He's a crook. And all of them, when they steal from us and ignore what it is that we rightfully own. I filed a complaint about four and a half years ago, and they ruled no conflict of interest occurred when the council member taught up or worked on matters for his private employer that did not come before the council. And my complaint was that he had written and introduced two bills regarding the landfill. Somehow, 2 years later, another complaint was filed, the same thing, which was, I also spoke with the Ethics Commission to complain about that. Identical complaints. Just recently in February, he was fined $500 for identical violations that they now say he was in violation, but in 4 years ago, he wasn't. So that brings me to the question, if you file an ethics complaint about the rail, you're going to get it washed. The Ethics Commission is going to wash it. If you file a complaint about Nestor Garcia, who is standing there shepherding and orchestrating these moves to dupe the public, to carry this rail project or the gravy train through, how do we combat that? What do we do? You know? Do you believe that the rail is here to stay now? Or do you? What's your opinion? Do you think there's a chance that these lawsuits, are they just fruitless or have no merit?
Well, they may be fruitless, but they certainly have merit. They're an attempt by the citizens to take back their government, which has been taken over by corporate interests.
Mm-hmm. So what happens, the questions I have, some of them, the caller once called and said that there's former Governor Cayetano who is a part of this effort. What is going to happen there? Is he really, if he succeeds, will he be completely, will the rail be done away with completely, or will we be seeing another method of transportation, a rail system introduced? You have any ideas?
I have no idea what would happen. My only concern is to bring this thing down before it bankrupts the entire state.
Oh, it'll bankrupt. I hit a pothole this morning thinking, and you want rail?
Yeah, I know. All these construction things out on the street and all of the infrastructure problems that we have with the sewers and God knows what, and I always say, well, we got enough money to build a rail. We don't have enough money to fix the infrastructure and the schools and the public services, but we got enough for the rail. And, of course, we don't have enough for the rail. One of the major... I can go on and on about it.
Well, go on and on.
One of the things that irritates me is when the rail proponents claim that rail is going to be greener than automobiles. Well, rail cannot be any greener than Hawaii Electric Company, which is currently getting 90% of its energy from fossil fuels, mostly petroleum. So the green argument is out the window right off. The next problem is the argument that it's going to solve traffic problems. It's not going to. The population is growing up or increasing. If I did some calculations, I think I calculated if population growth on Oahu continued at its present rate, that in another 600 years, every person on this island would get one square meter to stand on. You know, and that's in the works unless we do something about the population explosion. We're letting people come in from everywhere, and we just don't have room for continuous expansion. As a matter of fact, the whole planet doesn't have room for continuous expansion. If the population increase continues as it is in another 1,194 years, mm-hmm. every human on the planet will have one square meter to stand on, and that will include the two-thirds of the people treading water out in the middle of an ocean.
Mm-hmm.
That's how bad the population is. But the idea that even if we kept the population constant, that this rail would somehow magically reduce traffic congestion on the H1 is absurd. It's not going to, it simply can't have that.
It can't, and the way the surface streets are operated and the way the lights are, and they're crazy within themselves, the way the design and the curves and unnecessarily and trying to avoid. But, you know, speaking of the gravy train, I'm looking at some of the people that are thinking about placing on the Transportation Authority. Here's what most people don't understand. A lot of big landholders, so they probably won't sell their land to the city, and the big guys won't lose their land to condemnation. They will end up renting the land or leasing the land to the city for forever.
Mm-hmm.
They'll still own the land. They've lost nothing. And they will be making money hand over fist. And some of those people that are involved in that, you know, have purchased land and owned land before, and these parcels lay in the path of this. That's what troubles me as well, not what's going on externally. And Saldo, when you look at, I read something, it was talking about the cars were going to be very few seats. Is that logical?
Yeah, there's nothing logical. Nothing is logical about this, Carol. The whole thing is a flapdoodle. The idea of a transportation authority, is this a way that the city government is going to be able to insulate itself from public outrage? You know, you create this mysterious transportation authority.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another layer of government gobbledygook that will be used to obfuscate the problems that we are going to experience as a result of this. Nobody will be able to trust them. It's very much like putting a dictator in power.
And I think that's what we have throughout the various layers of our government and our representation is dictators. And those that are not dictating, they're just taking. I'd like to reflect on some of the things that troubles me about this. We hear daily how much of a budget shortfall and how much trouble we are in financially in this state.
But we got enough money to build the rail.
But yeah, but not as simple as that. Here's what's troubling and puzzling, is that Senator Inouye anoints it and blesses it. But he's supposed to represent us, and realizing that we are strapped for cash as it is. We're already struggling, and we're cutting social programs. And he's a Democrat now. These are the boys that says, oh, you go with me and I'll set you free. You see, but on the other hand, and then you take the governor. You take Mazie Hirono, you take the others. They are all shepherding this thing through, while on one hand claiming that the federal government isn't giving us any money and cutting the earmarks and all of that, they're crying in their face and hand in face or face in hand, and then they're supporting this rail. They're either drunk or just simply don't give a rat's butt about the rights of the people and what's right for the people, and that is, then you go down to the mayor. And they're all standing there proclaiming that we have budget shortfalls. Yeah, I'll let you give a medical terminology.
How about an explanation on the take?
Oh, okay.
You know, you just brought up one of my other pet peeves. People talk about federal money
mm-hmm.
as if it was a gift from fairies on the moon.
Right.
And it's not. It's our IRS taxes coming back to us, or what's remaining of our IRS taxes, returned to us after being filtered through Washington politics.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like federal. Oh my gosh, we can build it. We've got federal money coming to us. Mm-hmm. It's our money.
It didn't
just magically materialize out of outer space.
Yeah, well, they all walk around with magic wands, but I am really at a loss for trying to understand this. How can these supposed leaders, which, by the way, led us into this hellhole financially, because even though we had a Republican governor, we still had a Democratic legislative body. So something's wrong here. And I didn't mention that other portion of the legislators who support this. There is a problem. And you know, just out of curiosity, I'd like to hear from a couple of listeners. What do you think about the cost? Do you think we should go forward with this? Do you think that these people of sound mind making these decisions? 524-1080, if you'd like to. I'd like to hear someone. I'd like to hear just once someone pick up the phone and scream and says, "We can't take it no more." You know, here. You know, it's something's wrong. Yeah. You know, what is it that we're missing, you know?
I think we've forgotten a very important quotation, which is that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And, you know, I always thought that was kind of a cute phrase, but I never paid too much of attention to it. But I think that's absolutely true. And the vigilance is not against the countries that are 5,000 miles away. It's vigilance against your own government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because government is primarily interested in maintaining itself,
mm-hmm.
and giving the illusion that it's actually doing something for the people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when you look at what our government has actually been doing in my lifetime, which is 80 years, I can't think of very many things that the government, either at the national level or the local level, has been done, that the government has done, has actually been to the benefit of the people.
Yeah,
I was in the benefit of certain special interest groups.
Special interest groups and on and on. I mean, when you drive down the road and you see a work crew, first of all, you don't see any warnings. Generally, you don't see any warnings. Workmen ahead. We're just driving along with the little yellow light. You come around the curve, and there they are. And they're standing there putting hot wax, hot mix in a pothole and taking the feet and stamping on it. And you drive over it, and you collect half of it. It sticks to your tires, and you remove a layer, and then the next car comes along, and about 2 days later, it's another pothole. Not only are they crooked and robbing us, they're not concerned with not incorporating anything that makes sense in handling our problems. That's what's really puzzling and frustrating. They're not really wanting to do anything, but other than they want more money, the HGEA and all of those people. They're going to cave in to all of that, our leaders, then take the gravy train, and only the guys at a certain level or strata is going to get a bigger portion of the money. The unions, they're going to have jobs, and they're going to have union lower levels, but the millions that are squandered and taken and stolen and diverted, who's going to answer for that?
Well, obviously they're not.
No.
As far as the road repair, I certainly can't speak to the technicalities of how you do that more efficiently. And it mm-hmm. simply may be a
Hello?
Matter.
Just a moment, please.
Go ahead. Let's take the call.
Carly, got a comment or question?
Yeah, I have just a comment and maybe a special statement.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Cox, and the good doctor. And I agree with both of you all in regards to the rail. When you alluded to the fact that big businesses or landowners are probably in the renting, you know, their land,
mm-hmm.
if the rail is developed, the small business will have to get their homes up to yield to what is called the eminent domain. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm just a lay person, but I can see what's going on, and also the doctor talked about federal money. If we get it, it's our own taxpayer money coming back to us. And in the actual, if it is, if the rail does go through, The people who are getting money will be the unions, the cronies, the people that work for them, their relatives. Don't tie it to cronyism. This is straight up criminalism as far as I'm concerned. And they're letting important things go that need to be done today, like our mental health care system, the educational system, the penal institutions, roads, and bad shape. But like you, I drive down these roads, state and city roads, every day, and even the highways. They're full of potholes, or they've been patched inappropriately, and it's just wreaking havoc on all kinds of our vehicles. And I'm just a taxpayer who's just gotten fed up with these crooks, you know, people like Mr. Garcia, and you're right about him. And also, when you talked about maybe people saying that you're being too harsh or, you know, you're getting out of place, you're doing what you're supposed to do. You're an advocate for the people and the environment and for the citizens, the taxpayers of the state. And I think you're doing the right thing, and I don't think you're getting out of place in any kind of way. And you're a professional person, you have a right to speak the truth. And that's the truth. I think the truth because what you say is based on facts.
Thank you.
And that's basically it. I don't take too much time. But keep on doing what you're doing. I think you're doing a great job. I can't speak for the rest of the people in that state, but if they've got any, let's say, modicum of intelligence and sanity, they'll understand that people like you and other people like the doctor, are telling the truth. And that's why I really like the doctor when he talks about the type 1 and type 2 diabetes. It's very educational for me.
Okay.
So thank you both very much.
Well, thank you.
I should point out here that if people want to get the whole scoop on what's going on here, they should go online to www.honolulutraffic.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's Cliff Slater's organization, and Cliff has done extensive analysis on what all this flapdoodle is about, and none of it looks good. He gives absolute positive proof that it won't work. It's going to cost us a bundle that will end up paying for it forever, that it will never pay for itself. To which the only thing I can add is if the unions that are pushing for this thing aren't going to make any money either, because a lot of the work is beyond the expertise of the workers here, and we've already found that about $17 million is being used to build rail cars in Italy,
right?
And none of the local workers made any of that.
But they'll be there to sweep them, wash them, and clean them.
And
grease them.
And wash the graffiti off of the stations.
Right. Now, here's what's insane about this. Why would a landowner hand over the land to the city, who could then take that land, put the rail there, and situate condominiums, businesses, small businesses, and boutiques and restaurants? Why would a private business owner give up that land when they could benefit from businesses being alongside the rail and profit even more so?
Well, I think the answer is that they wouldn't.
Exactly, and that's why those...
The whole idea of this transit-oriented development is, why did we want to move to Hawaii in the first place? You wanted to get away from that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't move out here in 1970 for the purpose of...
Caller, you have a question? Comment? Hello?
Hello, Carol.
Ahead. Comment a question right quick.
Yeah, Carol, I got a question.
Go for it.
Concerning the Federal Transit Authority,
this is going to be the city now.
Yeah, concerned about the city, to get money for the buses and whatnot, a handy van.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to take that funds and use it for the rail?
The way things look, I wouldn't put it past them. They care about their buddies who walk tall and straight, not people that are handicapped or anything. I don't know. But if I had my guesses, the way things have been going, I'd say they're going to screw the handicap too.
Yeah, because I ride the handy van, and I ride the bus too. So I was wondering if the Federal Transit Authority is going to tell them no way, no how.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I can ask. And what specifically is it we could follow up on? Will the handicapped people be affected, or will the handy vans be reduced, or what?
Yeah, the funding for the handy vans and the buses, you know, if they're going to take the funds, you know, it's going to hamper the purchases of new buses and handy vans and stuff like that.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
Check on that. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Essentially, the answer is that the city is prepared to sacrifice virtually everything to get this rail built. And
hello?
Just a moment, please.
Handy van would probably go down the tubes or something that was too expensive because we've got to get the rail built.
Oh, yeah. Got a caller, comment, a question for Dr. Bill, sir?
Yes, I do.
Go ahead.
I called up a couple weeks ago about the Cayetano lawsuit, and a couple calls me. I got a bunch of naysayers. You know, he's the only guy that's a top politician in the past that has stepped up and, you know, is willing to put his butt on the line and put some money out and to point out that this thing is totally illegal. And, you know, he knows a lot of people that are deep into this thing. You know, he knows a lot of inside. So, you know, everybody should push for Cayetano, even though I didn't vote for him when he was in office. This is about the best thing he's done for the state, meaning to investigate this. And the thing that scares me is that this guy LaHood was just down here, and that just kind of puts it in place that there's a lot of people that are, you know, stepped into concrete and they're already locked in, like a previous caller was saying. There's just too many connections already connected on this thing. How are we going to, you know, turn it around? And the last thing, like, when the gentleman that you have there pointed out, Mr. Harris, that we had the right of way to go over the freeway. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That was one of the first proposals many, many years ago. If we're going to build anything new, just put it on top of our own right of way. And, you know, we don't disturb all the people that we have to displace, give all the land values up, you know, to make this thing go a different direction than on top of our own freeway. And we get the freeway all the way to Waianae, all the way to Mielani. We could go every direction with a rail on top of what we already own, our own property, the people of the state of Hawaii. So in other words, we're going down a trail that is just nothing but one hellhole. You know what I mean? That we're going to, every taxpayer in this state is going to pay astronomical. You know, eventually to build this thing, and we're going to pay for it after it's already been built. Mm. Like the gentleman was saying, it's not a profit maker, and it's just for people, and no more. We'll add on, we don't have the people to do the job. Most of the people are going to come in, the only little mini construction part, you know, where you move the shovel here, there. They're the only guys that are going to, local people are going to get paid any money. Mm. You know what I mean? So we're really taking it. You know what I mean? So I hope everybody, in some way, stands up for the rest of the people here and, you know, start screaming about what's going on here, okay?
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Certainly agree with that. Mm-hmm. It's likely that rail companies are going to bring in their own labor, and I don't know what these guys in the local labor unions think they're going to get out of this. Like, the Carpenters Union is the outfit that was paying for all of the rail ads when they were on TV a couple of years ago, and of course they got a motivation because they want to build D.R. Horton's big wooden subdivision out over the best agricultural land on Oahu anyway. Mm-hmm. And of course they will, they'll get some work, but I don't see how the rest of the unions are going to get any money out of this because it's going to be done by imported labor.
Well, I think names that I would love to be, everybody put on their refrigerator and leave them there come election time. That's Hirano, that's Hanabusa, that's Inouye. Well, we know Akaka is not. Carlisle, Abercrombie, Nestor Garcia, and Mufi Hanneman. And the scary part, Mufi saw himself show up at 17%. Chance of running against running for a senator, and he seemed to be encouraged, and we just told him no just short a couple of months ago. Just not only did we tell him no, we sent him the greatest loss that we've seen in modern political times here in the state. Mm-hmm. These guys, they're like Friday the 13th Jason. They pop up, they don't care.
you neglected the Todd April.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. And I should give him an. I want to be fair on the show. And Todd Otto,
yeah,
who's running right. Disney. He was going to be doing the. He left City Council
to go out and run the tour.
Run out there and do some goofy things, hang out with Minnie, and you know. But the problem is, see, I've said this and disclosed it on my show before. When they were trying to cut Rod Tam's, City Councilman Rod Tam's throat about his suspending of the restaurant events, I was told by Toto that, well, he has something too on Todd Otto. Well, wrong guy to tell that to, because in 2006 I filed a complaint and he watched that, and then here he is now saying Otto was guilty, but he's left the office, so clear and clean, and it isn't funny. So I think we need to take this entire process, these so-called politicians, they're not politicians anymore, they've become people that are simply robbing us. And we need to remember, put a list on the refrigerator, and when it comes election time, just remember, you have 5.9 billion reasons to vote, to not to vote for them.
Yeah.
I don't think you can look for any more reasons than that. 5.9 billion reasons, that's a blessing if you want to look at it that way. It's been explained to us. Why wouldn't we vote for these guys? Here they are, 5.9 billion. And that's just a drop in the bucket when it really, I bet you it'll be more than $15 billion in the long run, just to get it going.
I think that's probably reasonable. We can only make reasonable claims that it's going to cost $5.5 billion, but there are going to be cost overruns and
change orders.
You know, Murphy's Law reigns supreme over efforts like this, and everything that can possibly go wrong will, and it causes the bundle. Now, at this point, I'd like to point out that if you do go to Honolulu Traffic.com, you will find an opportunity to get involved in a lawsuit to try to bring down the environmental problems that are going to be caused by this lawsuit, or by this rail program. Did you know about that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Honolulu Traffic has hired an attorney to start filing lawsuits on behalf of the people that don't want this thing to take advantage of it. Somebody's getting organized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, that there's so much, and I might reach out for Panos or someone to come out, but I don't know. They're quite busy filing lawsuits. But I think we're in a pickle, and I think we should be reminded, no matter how much we have learned to respect our current so-called leaders, we need to abandon that thought, because nobody in their right mind would pick up the paper daily and be reminded how dire our financial conditions are in this state, and then still applaud and vote for these dudes.
Maybe I ought to mention something that nobody knows about, Murphy Hahnemann.
Well, let's talk. I mean, as long as it's factual.
It hasn't come out in the papers very much, but have you ever heard of McCulley Recreation Center? It's over on Pumahana.
Yes.
It's near the intersection of King and McCulley.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a public recreation center in the middle of a relatively depressed part of town. It was open to the public. Well, it was starting to come apart a little bit, and so one of Hahnemann's first acts after he got into office, after saying that his mantra was going to be, do we need it, can we afford it, on and on like that, was to close down McKelley Rec Center for 6 months to have it fixed, okay? And the idea was that the swimming pool and the recreation center were pulling each other apart because of solar expansion and contraction cycles. I got the original architect that designed the building, McKelley Recreation Center, and an independent forensic structural engineer to come over and take a look at it, and they both agreed that the problem could be fixed by putting in a construction plate, which is similar to those little things you see at the shopping malls.
Right.
There's steel plates that allow for expansion and contraction. Well, the McCulley was shut down allegedly for 6 months of repair that would cost about $1 million. The McCulley is still closed. It may open later this summer. That's 5 years instead of 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And the cost has gone from $1 million up to about $5.5 million.
We'll have to go look at that. But, you know, how many reasons do we need to share with the public that they should send this guy on down the road and tell them to go get a real job? Because I'm sick and tired of seeing them pop up and in our poll. It doesn't make sense. But anyway, thank you. I'm glad you joined me on this. And speaking of government, and as you said earlier, are they representing us and the Bannon? And I'm going to change gears here, but same vein. Let's take the travel aboard the airplanes. This is what's frightening. You know, Big Brother, that's what government seems to be operating in, the mode of Big Brother. And that is, and here's a perfect example. The TSA was founded and built real quickly to protect us on the airplanes, right, in our travels. Can't take in, they're seizing nail clippers and perfume from little ladies and children. They're patting down and frisking little babies practically, right? And it's all for our safety, because no one wants a terrorist to come around, because people can get injured and get killed, and it threatens our safety as travelers and as a nation. Why is it then that the Department of Transportation head didn't find it equally important to just keep an eye on these guys falling asleep in the towers? If they're really concerned, if government is really concerned about our safety in air travel, why would you frisk me and frisk a two-year-old baby and refuse to let me carry on a tube of toothpaste because you would want to protect me? Then you let the plane take off and you fall asleep at the... I'm sorry, there is something disjointed there. Now, some of you probably can't make the connection, but my concern is that this is a glowing example of how government will lie to us when it's time to control us. They'll put these things in place. But to protect us, whether it's finances or actually manpower, remember now, they tried to bust the unions, or with Ronald Reagan and the air traffic controllers, where he fired them all. And they're shocked now that the guy is working two shifts and falling asleep?
Well, I think the answer to that is that being an air traffic controller is a pretty damn boring job.
Exactly.
Unless you're at a busy airport where there's planes zinging in every day. My second comment is that any pilot that can't get his plane down safely without any control tower, it probably is in the wrong line of work.
Yeah, but he needs to know that. I mean, but if he
needs to know when
he's approaching the tower and approaching, he needs to know. I'm sure every pilot there is. You go to Molokai right now, and you at nighttime you turn on the lights on the runway from your own airplane. I mean, so we really don't need them. It's just that the what I'm trying to illustrate here is that Big Brother searches us and puts in the scanners and the body scanners and what have you, and pull us aside and search us.
Well, I think that's a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
We've got major hang-ups at the airport. You have to take off your shoes, you have to take off your socks, put your laptop in a box that they run through the scanner.
Yes.
And there's nobody, last time I checked, who's really running checks on the luggage. I don't see any reason that
they do
blow up a plane.
Yeah, they do, but my point is that, you know, this is how, just to illustrate how government, sometimes you have a right to question government because their actions, there's no follow-through. On one hand, they're extreme, and on the other hand, so it's the same thing. On one hand, well, we have no money, and the federal government is cutting our budget, and we won't be able to fund these programs, but put in the rail.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And, you know, at every level, government seems to have abandoned common sense, and they're willing to speak to us.
You have to watch government at every level. Every decision that's made in government ought to be taken with the greatest skepticism at this point, I've had 80 years to watch this baloney going down. And as I said, I've never seen the government do anything that made any sense.
Yeah, and I mean, we seem to survive, but it looked like it's getting more difficult to have a sound economy, clean communities, because they seem to be rot. I think we could do without them.
I think the basic function of government, what is government? Government is a monopoly on the use of lethal force,
mm-hmm.
okay? And it's there for two legitimate purposes, to protect us from a foreign invasion,
right.
which we have never had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
We're always fighting wars 5,000 miles away. And protect us against domestic criminality.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it ought to be on the free market. It ought to be on the open market.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to be self adjusting.
But when the criminals get inside government,
that's when the problems start.
And then when criminals sit in, the prosecutors become part of the team of criminals.
Did you ever hear of Newman's Law?
No.
Newman's Law is that cream and bastards rise to the top.
Okay.
Okay, this is a throwaway line from a very bad Paul Newman movie called The Drowning Pool. And don't bother watching the movie, but remember that line. It's not really Newman's idea. It
mm-hmm.
was a scriptwriter's idea, but it's a great one. Mm-hmm. And it explains why human societies are always run by the least conscientious and least honest people. Because in order to be a successful politician, you have to be a good liar, and
mm-hmm.
you have to be completely devoid of the scruples that most of us have that allow them to rise to the top over the bodies of their political opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to the top by doing that, and they remain just as dishonest when they get to the top as they were on the way up.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Bill Harris, and anytime, just come back, and it's refreshing, and either on the medical side or these issues, because I want to get different perspective and share with the people. There's some illnesses out there that we need to deal with, both physically and mentally.
You got it.
Okay, well, thank you. And real quick, your website is?
Oh, my, the website that you ought to write down is
VSH.org. www.vsh.org.
Yeah.
And they can be reached at 944-8344.
Yep.
And thank you. You can catch us at carolcox.com, carolcox.com.
I should add that there are over 125 full-length videos by world-renowned experts on nutrition.
Okay. Well, thank you. And hopefully in the coming weeks, we're going to talk about some more true corruption that we've come across. And I'm also going to be asking some questions. I want to see, I'm going to FOIA you, Mr. Charles Jules' records and letters of how he was exempted from going to war. I mean, if you're going to be a true blue American and represent us, go join the brothers that you so easily wear the same uniform. I want to see how did he get out, so I'll hopefully be able to share some of that with you. Thank you. Aloha.
I mean, in trust your sin, cause this that's living in hit. Can't hate on it. So hate it, you wanna fall. Cause that ain't gonna make me wanna. So stop what I'm doing to you. Come on, beat goes thong. In the club, they be jumping. To the bass, that's like pumping. And the girls like the speakers thumping. Cause I told them, shake your heart.
Listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.